ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 5 टेक्स्ट 1। शुका उवाच एवं भगवत आदिष्टो दुर्वासश्चक्रता पितः अम्बरीशम् उपावृत्य तत्पादौ दुःखितो गृहीत। श्री ट्रांसलेशन एंड देयर इज नो परपोर्ट टू इट। ट्रांसलेशन बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। सुखदेव गोस्वामी सेड व्हेन दस एडवाइज्ड बाय लॉर्ड विष्णु Durvasa Muni, who was very much harassed by the Sudarshan Chakra, immediately approached Maharaj Ambarish. Being very much aggrieved, the Muni fell down and collapsed the king's lotus feet. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana. So today we are reading from this chapter 5 entitled Durvasa Muni's Life Spared, from text 1 to text 6. So actually I was supposed to take text 6, but since Shruta Kirti Prabhu did not read text 1 to 5, so I'll just go through those verses and then we'll discuss text 6. So translation once again for text 1. Sri Sukhdev Goswami said, when thus advised by Lord Vishnu, Durvasa Muni, who was very much harassed by the Sudarshan Chakra, immediately approached Maharaj Ambarish. Being very much aggrieved, the Muni fell down and collapsed the king's lotus feet. Text 2. When Durvasa Muni touched his feet, Maharaj Ambarish was very much ashamed, and when he saw Durvasa's attempting to offer prayers because of mercy, he was aggrieved even more. Thus he immediately began offering prayers to the great weapon of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then Ambarish Maharaj speaks. Ambarish Maharaj said, O Sudarshan Chakra, you are fire, you are the most powerful sun, and you are the moon, the master of all luminaries. You are the water, earth and sky. You are the air. You are the five sense objects, sound, touch, form, taste and smell. And you are the senses also. Text 4. O most favorite of Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have thousands of spokes. O master of the material world, destroyer of all weapons, original vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Kindly give shelter and be auspicious to this Brahmana. Text 5. O Sudarshan Wheel, you are religion, you are truth, you are encouraging statements, you are sacrifice, and you are the enjoyer of the fruits of sacrifice. You are the maintainer of the entire universe, and you are the supreme transcendental prowess in the hands of Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the original vision of the Lord, and therefore you are known as Sudarshan. Everything has been created by your activities, and therefore you are all pervading. There is a purport to it, a small purport. The word Sudarshan means auspicious vision. From the Vedic instructions, we understand that this material world is created by the glands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sa Ekshata Sa Ashrajata. The Supreme Personality of Godhead glanced over the Mahat Tattva, or the total material energy, and when it was agitated, everything came into existence. Western philosophers sometimes think that the original cause of creation was a chunk that exploded. If one thinks of this chunk as the total material energy, the Mahat Tattva, one can understand that the chunk was agitated by the glands of the Lord, and thus the Lord's glands is the original cause of material creation. Text 6. O Sudarshan, you have a very auspicious hub, and therefore you are the upholder of all religion. You are just like an auspicious comet for the inauspicious comet for the irreligious demons. Indeed, you are the maintainer of the three worlds. You are full of transcendental effulgence. You are as quick as the mind, and you are able to work wonders. I can simply utter the word Namaha, offering all obeisances unto you. Purport. The disc of the Lord is called Sudarshan because he does not discriminate between high and low criminals or demons. Durvas Muni was certainly a powerful Brahmana, but his acts against the pure devotee, Maharaj Ambarish, were no better than the activities of Asuras. As stated in the Shastras, Dharmam tu Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam, the words Dharma refer to the orders or the laws given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Real Dharma is surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, real Dharma means bhakti or devotional service to the Lord. The Sudarshan Chakra is here addressed as Dharma Setave, the protector of Dharma. Maharaj Ambarish was a truly religious person, and consequently, for his protection, the Sudarshan Chakra was ready to punish even such a strict Brahmana as Durvas Muni because he had acted like a demon. There are demons even in the form of Brahmanas. Therefore, Sudarshan Chakra does not discriminate between the Brahmana demons and the Sura demons. Anyone against the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees is called a demon. In the Shastras, we find many Brahmanas and Kshatriyas who acted as demons and have been described as demons. According to the verdict of the Shastras, one has to be understood according to his symptoms. If one is born of a Brahmana father, but his symptoms are demoniac, he is regarded as a demon. The Sudarshan Chakra is always concerned with annihilating the demons. Therefore, he is described as Adharma Shila Suradhumna Ketave. Those who are not devotees are called Adharma Shil. The Sudarshan Chakra is just like an auspicious comet for all such demons. So I don't know how much to speak. The time is already there. And there is nothing to speak also much. By the blessings of all devotees, I'll make some attempt to just read what I'm going through or what I'm reading. Nothing more than that. So here, in this beginning of this chapter, all these six verses, there are two beautiful aspects which come out of it. The first aspect is the Lord has punished Durvas Muni by sending Sudarshan Chakra. And finally, in the previous chapter, the Lord concludes that if at all you want to be saved by the Sudarshan Chakra, then the only way is you have to take shelter of my devotee. Otherwise, the Sudarshan is not going to listen to me. Only the Sudarshan is going to listen to my devotee. And if he forgives you, then Sudarshan will come back to my place. I have no control over my Sudarshan. So taking this good advice, finally, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Durvas Muni comes and falls at the feet of Maharaj Ambarish. So this is one aspect, that you repent over your activities and finally understand what is your saving grace, what is going to save you, and knowing that, taking shelter or following the instructions of the Lord and taking shelter of the devotee against whom we have committed offense. This is one aspect. And even along with this aspect, even one more aspect is, even though so many things happened, we read that even though that fiery demon came, and the person who has sent that fiery demon looks most disturbed than the person on whom this fiery demon was supposed to act, Maharaj Ambarish. He is not at all disturbed. In fact, he is just standing with his folded hands, meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the question may come, why was Ambarish Maharaj not disturbed? This is one aspect, adding to that what I said, taking shelter. And the second aspect is, okay, normally if somebody commits offense against us, or somebody disturbs us, and some or the other, if he realizes his mistake, or if somebody tells him that you should go and ask forgiveness, and that person out of his sincere desire or some other due to formalities, he may come and ask forgiveness. But it is not easy for the person who has been offended to really, from the core of his heart, to forgive that person who has offended him. The person may formally say, okay, Prabhu, yes, I no offense, I didn't take it as an offense, let's be friends. But even in that presentation, the attitude is completely different. There is always, majority of the time, there is a formal touch It is not coming out of the heart. And what to speak of just forgiving the opposite person? Here Ambarish Maharaj is crossing all limits to the extent of praying to Sudarshan Chakra that please protect this person. This is not something which an ordinary person or an ordinary devotee can do. To forgive is one thing, and to pray pray for others a savior is completely beyond any person's imagination. So these two aspects come out very prominent in these verses. First of all, why was Ambarish Maharaj not disturbed? And most important than that is, how can a person pray for the protection of his enemy, so-called enemy? Not even Ambarish Maharaj is not considered enemy, but the acts of Durvas Muni, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, were like worse than the demons. Even though he was well-cultured, civilized, a person who has all knowledge, if a person who does not have knowledge, uncivilized, if he commits any offense, if he uses some harsh words, it is understood that out of his ignorance he is doing something. But here is Ambarish Maharaj, here is Durvas Muni, who has all knowledge, learned and everything, philosopher, but still going to such an extent of committing such an offense against the lotus feet. It is beyond even for a person like me, I can't even think of how this is possible. But then one has to understand, why does a person commit an offense? What is the root of all offenses? The root of all offenses, when one fails, this is especially in relationship to devotees, when one fails to understand the supremacy and the supreme position of the Supreme Lord Krishna, and then he fails, more than that, he fails to understand the connection, the relationship, the link of that particular devotee with that Supreme Lord, on the Lord's affection and relationship with that devotee. If a person can just understand or even think that here is a devotee trying to serve the Lord, here is a devotee who has established his connection to whatever degree it may be with the Supreme Lord, and the Lord has also some concern for him depending upon his extent of surrender or degree of surrender, then a person will never commit offense. Because it is not only that person is dealing, as they say, he's not taking panga from that devotee. He's directly committing offense against the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So therefore, if a person has little bit intelligence, and if he can meditate on this one point, then he can be careful next time. We cannot say that one will not commit offense. But at least think twice before committing offense. That who is this person and what is the relationship of this person with the Supreme Lord. So this is the root, that when one fails to understand or see the relationship of any person with the Supreme Lord. But for a person to forgive others and to pray for others, it is only, the only criteria, only requirement is you have to qualify yourself or come to the level of Maharaj Ambarish. One has to promote or graduate oneself to such an elevated state to become such a great devotee as Maharaj Ambarish. Otherwise, it is not possible. So Ambarish Maharaj was a great Vaishnav. And what is the asset of a great Vaishnav? Or what is the prerogative of a great Vaishnava? His asset or prerogative is, he is able to deal with different situations in a proper way. Situations may come, conditions may come in his life, but how to deal with those situations, how to tackle those problems with maintaining his consciousness without being disturbed, fixing his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord, that is what a devotee is. And that is the asset of a devotee. He is able to fix his mind without getting disturbed. And how to react to those situations, that is an asset which every devotee must have, or at least aspire to have. But how will I react to situations? And we find this in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that how when Parikshit Maharaj was cursed, even though there was no apparent fault from his side, but what was his reaction? His reaction was, he's just praying when Shukdev Goswami arrives in the arena of the great sages, What does he pray? Tammayopayatam pratiyanta vipra ganga cha devi drishta chittamishe dvije prasista kukhastakshatova dashatva alam gayato vishnu gatha. He says, O Brahmanas, just accept me as a completely surrendered soul and let Mother Ganges, the representation of the Lord, also accept me in that very same way. For I have already taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord into my heart. Let the snake bird or whatever magical thing that this Brahmana has created bite me or do whatever. What is my desire? My desire is that all of you just continue singing the glories of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. What was his reaction? Rather than blaming anyone, rather than reacting in a different way, rather than trying to destroy the ashram of Shramik Rishi and destroy his son Sringi, what was his reaction? His reaction was, let this Takshaka come and bite me, or let whatever may happen. This is an opportunity for me to hear continuously Vishnu Gatha, the glories of the Supreme Lord. This is how a devotee reacts to the situations. And what is the basis of his reaction? Because in order to react, there should be some base, there should be some understanding. So what is the basis of that? The basis of that is his philosophical understanding. His understanding of the Supreme Lord's position, his understanding of material nature, and his understanding of his own constitutional position. Only when a person understands this perfectly, then that will determine what his reaction will be. And this is very beautifully explained in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava and explaining about the Avanti Brahmana. So we see in the life history of Avanti Brahmana, he was a very learned Brahmana, had a lot of money, but because of miserly nature, not using it for his own enjoyment, for sense gratification, for not for spiritual purpose, he lost all the money, and because he did not have any good relationship with his family members, finally the family members also rejected him. And finally, understanding the futility of all these assets, what did he do? He gave up everything, and like a mendicant, like a beggar, he was roaming around to find the shelter of the Supreme Lord. And when he was on his path, how was he treated? People were spitting at him, people were speaking ill about him, people were doing so many things which you cannot expect, insulting him, people were tying him, people were beating him with stones, passing urine, passing stool, passing foul air on him. So many things. He was put into such a miserable situation. Persons, when you are not a devotee and you are put into a miserable situation, you understand, oh, this is my life. But after taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, if such a thing happens, if this is the reaction, then it is very difficult for devotees to digest, at least for a person like me to digest all these things. Why such a thing is happening? What is the reaction of people like me? It is simply blaming each and everything around us, except one's own self. Except one's own self, we start blaming each and every person, each and everything, and more than that, the Supreme Lord. Kya kar diya? What is happening with me? Kya socha tha? Kya yehi karna tha kya? Kya tere? So many things. So many galis we'll give and what not. And we may even give up the path of devotional service. And so many devotees leave the association of devotees. Why? Because they were not treated properly, they were insulted, or somebody spoke something. I will give up this association, let me take shelter in some other place. Some other people are there, some other place. But that is not going to solve the problem. Unless and until a person takes or understands what his position is and what he has to do. And that is very beautifully explained by Avanti Brahmana, his realizations. So I'll just like to read those realizations of Avanti Brahmana and what is his conclusion. So when Avanti Brahmana was treated like that, his conclusion is not to blame anyone. What is his conclusion? He says, all the sufferings which I am undergoing, it may be from other living entities, from the higher forces of nature, or from his own body, they were unavoidable, being present or allotted to him by providence. So even after being insulted by so many people, he was just undisturbed by all those things. And then his conclusion is, he says, these people, this is what one, actually we should try to meditate. He's saying, these people are not the cause of my happiness and distress. Neither are the demigods. So Avanti Brahmana includes all possibilities which an ordinary person would blame. First thing is, we'll blame others. Because of him, iske vajah se mera aisa hua. Then he says, if he is not the cause, then some higher sources, demigods. Then he says, neither the demigods, my own body, the planets, people say, mera nakshatra kharab hai, mera grah nakshatra, something is happening, uske liye mera aisa ho raha hai. He's saying, not even the planets, not even the, some people, even those who are little bit religious, pious, they'll say, shayad pichle janam mein kuch paap kiya rahega. He says, not even my past work. Or some people say, time hi kharab hai. Saying, no, not even the time. He's saying, rather, it is the mind alone that causes happiness and distress and that perpetuates the rotation of material life. So rather than blaming anyone, he is simply blaming his own mind. And this mind, he says, is so powerful. How does it function? He describes, he does not just say mind. He says, how does this mind function? This mind functions by actuating or by, you know, igniting the functions of the material modes, from which evolve different kinds of material activities in the modes of goodness, ignorance, and passion. And from these activities, one gets a corresponding statuses in life. So depending upon the status, whatever he gets, according to that, is a different types of happiness or suffering. But ultimately, whatever the status may be, he has to suffer. Just like Prabhupada says, if one person is put in a first-class prison, you cannot say he's happy. He's still suffering. His suffering may be first class, but still it is suffering. And then he says, why? Why is the mind able to act on us? That is more important. He says, why this mind is acting on me? Because I have embraced this mind. Somebody is not going to act on us unless until we allow that person to act. So similarly, Avanti Brahman is telling, because I've embraced this mind, which is the mirror reflecting the image of the material world, thus I have become engaged in enjoying the objects of desire, and I'm entangled due to contact with the three modes. So everything begins with embrace. Fall down begins with embrace. So here, it is not some gross embrace, it is a subtle embrace. Ajamil also fell down seeing the embrace. So here, rather than embracing something gross, here, actual fall down, dangerous fall down is when one embraces one's mind. And then, he says, what should one do? He says, everything whatever a person may desire in life, charity, prescribed duties, or whatever a person may do, observance of major and minor regulative principles, hearing from scripture, pious works, and purifying vows, all have their final aim in subduing of the mind. If all these things, whatever we are doing, just like a person may be fasting, but like Maharaj says, that body may be fasting, but the mind is feasting. You may be fasting and thinking, so I am doing Nirjala Ekadashi, I am not eating, I am not drinking, I am chanting 64 rounds. But the mind is feasting, thinking that, see others. Plate, ek bajake ne plate leke niche bhaag rahe, they are running for prasad. They are running after Mahaprasad because niche prasad thik se nahi milta hai, so let me eat some Mahaprasad. So fallen, sense gratifiers, don't have control, at least they can't fast once in 15 days and see myself. Mind is feasting. So whatever one does, its should ultimate aim should be to control the mind. And how to control the mind? When the mind is engaged on concentration on the Supreme Lord. And why to control the mind? Then he says, he gives answers. He puts one question and he gives answer. He says, if one's mind is perfectly fixed and pacified, then tell me what need does one have to perform ritualistic charity and other pious rituals? And if one's mind remains uncontrolled, lost in ignorance, then what are the use of these arrangements, engagements for him? We may do so many things, But by all those activities, if your mind is not controlled, just like in first canto it says that notupadye dadiratim shramai vai kevalam, it is like that only. If your mind is not controlled, then it is shramai vai kevalam. And why to control this mind? Because all the senses have been under the control of mind since time immemorial, and the mind himself never comes under the sway of any other. The mind is controlling everyone, all the senses, but himself does not want to come under anyone. He is stronger than the strongest, and his godlike power is fearsome. Therefore, anyone who can bring the mind under control becomes the master of the senses. Therefore, one should control the mind. And what is the result of controlled mind? He says, failing to conquer this irrepressible enemy, the mind whose urges are intolerable and who torments the heart, many people are completely bewildered and create useless quarrel with others. If the mind is not controlled, then it simply creates quarrels. And thus, they conclude that other people are their friends and their enemies, or parties indifferent to them. So you can understand why Ambarish Maharaj reacted in a way he reacted. Because he never considered anyone as his enemy or friend, because he was not influenced by his mind. When mind is under control, then the mind will not allow you to think that here is a person who is my friend, here is a person. Krishna speaks about that. It is only the mind that makes us feel that here is my friend and here is my enemy. We differentiate and accordingly we deal with them. And he says, if you say, now he rules out. He rules out and he gives answers. When he says, he does not just say mind. He says, what about others? So many people are there, and which apparently appear to be the cause of my suffering. But then he says, taking each and every person, each and every point, he says, if you say that if people around me are the cause of my happiness and distress, then where is the place of the soul in such a conception? Because ultimately it is the soul through the mind who is experiencing the happiness or the miseries. So where is the conception of the soul? This happiness and distress pertain not to the soul, but to the interaction of material bodies. If one person is affecting me, then it is one person affecting the other person. So soul is not involved in that. Therefore, he rules out that. And what analogy gives? If someone bites his own tongue, you have this experience sometime while eating. If someone bites his own tongue with his own teeth, it's not that somebody else is coming and biting your tongue. Then you can blame others. I mean, it's jivan kaat liya. But with your own teeth, you are biting your own tongue. So what will you do? Will you take a hammer and break your teeth? You rascal teeth, you cause so much harm to my tongue. No. Will not blame anyone. So he is giving the analogy. If someone bites his own tongue with his own teeth, at whom can he be angry at the suffering? All of us experience that. At the most, we can give value to our own self, you know, of being careless while chewing. But you can't blame anyone. You can't, you know, explode on others. Because of you, I bit my tongue. No. So he rules out the first thing. No person, no people outside can be the cause of your suffering. Then he says, if you think that these demigods, they are the cause of your suffering, who rule the bodily senses, then he says, how can such suffering apply to the spirit soul? Because this acting and being acted upon are merely interaction of changeable senses and their presiding deities. Ye unka mamla hai. Senses and the presiding deities, they are dealing with each other. So how can the influence of demigods affect me? And he's giving the analogy to understand this, to make this point clear. He says, when one limb of the body attacks another, with whom can the person in that body be angry? Imagine if a fly is sitting on your cheek and you are agitating, and suddenly you want to kill that fly or mosquito, and you hit it hard, thinking that this is the last shot, and the one shot, one and the last shot, I'll kill this mosquito. And somehow or the other, the mosquito flies away. And who is receiving that shot? Never ever experienced such a high, big shot. You look, blame others? No. One part of your body is hitting your own face. So you can't blame. So it is one sense, senses are interacting with the Or demigods are interacting with the senses, who are the presiding over the senses. So whom to blame? He rules out that. And then he says, now if you think that the soul himself is a cause of happiness and distress, then we could not blame others, since happiness and distress would be simply the nature of the soul. To experience happiness or distress is the nature of the soul. So according to this theory, nothing except the soul actually exists. And if we were to perceive something beside the soul, that would be illusion. Therefore, since happiness and distress do not actually exist in this conception, why to become angry at oneself or others? If the nature of the soul is to become happy and distress, then why to blame others? Because that is what you are. You are the soul. So whom to blame? Why to blame something outside? Why to blame something beyond? If you know that your nature is to be angry, that little bit here and there, you get ignited. Will you blame others? No, because you understand that is my nature. That something which agitates you, immediately you break up. You burst into anger, because that is your nature. So you can't blame outside people. You cannot say, tumne gussa dila raha, you are causing me anger. No. Others may ignite you, but what, because of your nature, you are bursting out. Other person may not burst in the same situation. So that is your nature. And this is the soul. If you think the soul is responsible, and if that is the nature, then even the soul is not responsible for that. And then he says, if you think the planets are responsible, then where is the relationship with the soul, who is eternal? After all, the effects of the planets apply only to things that have taken birth. Planets can act only on those things that have taken birth, but there is no birth for the soul. It is eternal. So therefore, even planets cannot act. Therefore, since the living entity is distinct from these planets and from the material body, again, whom should he vent his anger? So he's ruling out the planets also. And then a person says, my past karma. So if we assume that fruitive work is a cause of happiness and distress, we still are not dealing with the soul. There's nothing to do with the soul. The idea of material work arises when there is a spiritual actor who is conscious and a material body that undergoes a transformation of happiness and distress as a reaction to such work. Now, he explains, since the body is material, since the body is made up of matter, has no life, matter itself does not have any life, it cannot be actual recipient of happiness and distress. Like if you go to a dead body and put gulab jamun in his mouth, will he say, are meetha hai ya sugar kam hai ya bahut kaccha hai? He'll not say. But if we rush into the kitchen, rajbo ka mahaprasad khaya hai, gulab jamun hai usme, and as soon as you bite that gulab jamun, you feel bahar se to naram hai, andar se kadak hai patthar ki tarah, you'll immediately react. But dead body will not react. So being dull, being dead, matter will not react. So the body is ruling out. Body cannot react. And he says, nor the soul, who is completely spiritual, aloof from the material body. Because soul is spiritual, nothing material can act on the soul, these fruitive activities. So body being dead, material body being dead, it cannot react. And the soul being spiritual, he is not affected by that. Since karma thus has no ultimate basis in either the body or the soul, at whom can one become angry? You cannot become angry. And then finally, he says, if time, if you consider time as a cause of happiness and distress that we experience, still cannot apply to the spirit soul. Why? Because time, Krishna says, time I am. Time is manifestation of Lord's spiritual potency, and living entities are also spiritual. Living entities are also spiritual. So how can time act? How can one spirit act on another spirit? And then he gives an analogy. Certainly a fire does not burn his own flames, nor does the cold harm its own snowflakes or hails. Fire cannot burn his own flames, and snow cannot harm his own flakes or hail. In fact, the spirit soul is transcendental and beyond the experience of material happiness and distress, at whom therefore one should be angry. And finally concludes that what is the cause? He says, the false ego. The false ego gives a shape to the illusory material existence and thus experiences material happiness and distress. The spirit soul, however, is transcendental to material nature. He can never actually be affected by material happiness and distress in any place under any circumstances or by the agency of any person. A person who understands this has nothing whatsoever to fear from the material creation. So this is the basis of Ambarish Maharaj's reaction. He was not fearful. Why? Because being a pure devotee, he completely understood that whatever is happening, ultimately, not even Durvasa is responsible. He is not blaming anyone. He is just content with himself, blaming his own self, no one else. And therefore, no fear, unaffected, completely undisturbed. But does a person, or is being undisturbed, the ultimate goal? No. So Avanti Brahmana then finally quotes this famous verse. When you are undisturbed, when you are not affected, then how will you know that person? The person is known by his most important characteristic feature. What is that? I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of nescience by being firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. Tamo Mukunda Angri Niveshaya Tam Tarishyami Duranta Param. This is the verse. So, a person who is undisturbed, a person who has full knowledge, how will he present himself? His presentation is, he is completely fixing himself at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord with full determination. And when a person is determined, no external condition or situations can affect him. He cannot be disturbed by anything if he is firmly determined to fix himself at the lotus feet of the Lord. And that is what Ambarish Maharaj was doing. When Durvasmu, when that fiery demon came, he was not running here and there to save himself like Durvasmuni. He was just standing with his closed eyes, meditating on the Supreme Lord, being fully determined. And this is what is this month of Damodar, to be fully determined. So when Mother Yashoda, when Krishna broke that pot and Mother Yashoda ran behind and finally she was successful in catching him, she brought a rope to tie him, but a rope was falling, two fingers too short. So she brought more ropes, she went here, she went there, she went into the house to get more and more ropes. But every time the rope would fall, two fingers too short. But still she never gave up. Even to the extent that all the gopis, the neighboring gopis, they came, they were laughing at Mother Yashoda, telling that Mother Yashoda, give up, you can't tie him. But Mother Yashoda did not give up. I didn't read in Bhagavatam, but I've heard Maharaj saying that Mother Yashoda, what was her determination? She says, let me see the extent of his waist. He is increasing his size, even though externally it is looking the same, but still this rope is falling short. I want to see the extent of his waist. That was her determination. And in trying to bind Krishna, her sari was becoming loose, her hair became loose, she was perspiring, she was breathing heavily. So many things she had to undergo to bind Krishna. And still she was not successful. And it was not that she was a young lady, she was an elderly lady. Bhagavatam explains. Because of her heavy body, she was not able to run also. But still she was running. Why? Because of her determination that today I will bind you. And that is what is the most beautiful jewelry or the valuable asset of a devotee, which attracts Krishna. Is your determination that how much, or my dear Lord, no matter what you do, I am still not going to leave your lotus feet. I will continue to serve you. And when the Lord Damodar, when he saw his mother, the perspiration coming on her forehead, her hair becoming loose, the flowers from her hair falling down, the comb falling down. Then only, he says, the verse says, evam swageha dhamani yashoda sandadhatyapi gopinam shushmayanti nam smayanti vishwa vishmita bhavet. So here it explains that Krishna saw her mother, his mother, endeavoring with determination. We may also endeavor with determination, but many times our endeavor is what? What is our attitude of our endeavor? Crying. We endeavor cryingly. Gali marte, you know. Still, because we are told that we are supposed to endeavor, somewhere in a frustrated state, in most rejected state, we endeavor. But what is Mother Yashoda's endeavor? What is her determination? How is she endeavoring? She was not frustrated with her endeavors. She was smiling. So along with determination, our endeavors should first of all be with faith that no matter what happens, I am not going to live. I am going to bind with that full faith. But adding to that faith should be the attitude of blissfulness. And that is what Mother Yashoda was presenting. She, when all the other ladies were laughing, Mother Yashoda was also laughing, but still she continued her endeavor that I am going to bind him. And when the Supreme Lord sees your attitude, that in what attitude are you determined or in what attitude are you endeavoring to capture me or to come close to me, then swamata swinna gatraya vishwasta kabarasraja drishtva parishramam Krishna kripayasit swabandhane drishtva. Krishna will then glance at you and he will make you endeavor till all the drops of perspiration of all your conditioning comes out, till all the flowers of your ego fall down, till the comb of all your material desires falls down from your hair. He will make you endeavor and struggle, and then finally sees that everything has fallen down, and then he will look at you and then he will shower his mercy. Kripayasit swabandhane. And how does he give his mercy? By allowing himself to be bound by your love. This is Deepotsav. This is Kartik. So I was just thinking, what is the result of being or endeavoring with such determination and with a blissful attitude? One develops purity. Purity, because that endeavors will completely purify you. Krishna will see to it. If you are determined and endeavor, Krishna will see to it that your endeavors will completely purify you. All your ego will be shaven up, completely removed. All your desires, all your whatever it may be, Krishna will completely purify you. And when everything is gone away, what remains with you? Nothing. And when nothing remains with you, what follows? Your complete dependence on the Lord. You completely depend on the Lord, and when you reach that stage of completely depending on the Lord, then you become indifferent to what is happening outside. Who's doing what? Who's speaking what? Because the only focus is to serve the Lord with my full heart. And therefore, and that is what, you know, even though Madhavendra Puri prays, his famous prayer, what does he pray? Let the sharp moralist accuse me of being illusioned. I do not mind. Experts in the Vedic activities may slander me as being misled. Friends and relatives may call me frustrated. My brothers may call me a fool. The wealthy Mammonites They may call me as mad. And the learned philosophers may assert that I am much too much proud. Still, my mind does not budge an inch from the determination to serve the lotus feet of Govinda. This is one aspect. But the second aspect is, even though I am unable to do it, Madhavendra Puri does not give or leave any room where people to say, you know, I am not able to do it. Even though you are not able to do it, but still be determined. Only this determination attracts Krishna. And therefore, I was just thinking, yesterday night, Radhuti Prabhu was telling me when we were dressing inside, After finishing the letter, saying, "Hey, lamp offer karne nahi ja rahe." So I said, "I'm thinking, what is the meaning of this lamp to me? Is it just a ritual to go and offer lamp, or does this lamp has some meaning to us? Are we just coming and offering a lamp, waving around 4, 2, 3, 7, and finishing off as a formality? Or are we praying that, my dear Lord, accept this lamp, which may be in so many forms. It may be my devotion, it may be my love, it may be my determination, it may be my endeavor. Or, my dear Lord, with this lamp which I'm offering to you, that fire, that flame which is there, please burn away all my material desires. Please burn away all my lust, so that this lust or these material desires which are burning me, that can be completely extinguished. And with that extinguished heart, with a cool heart, I can continue to engage in your loving devotional service. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thanks for being tolerant and patient hearing. And sorry for taking your extra time. Hare Krishna.